Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Kia ora, welcome to the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast and thanks for tuning in this week. I'm your host Jordan, I'm a mum of one, soon to be two boys and a lover of all things birth and a very passionate storyteller. The goal of Kiwi Birth Tales is to empower, inform, educate and connect families from New Zealand and all over the world, talking about the things that are so often kept to ourselves or shared with only our nearest and dearest because of this taboo that seems to surround sharing stories about birth. All stories deserve to be heard, no story more important than the other, and with this podcast you'll get a variety without bias. The podcast is not intended for medical advice. I'm not an advocate for any particular mode of birth or birth care, and this platform is simply here to share these beautiful, empowering Kiwi Birth Tales with you all. So I hope you enjoy. In today's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales, I speak with Maxine about the birth of her son, Arthur, only 9 weeks ago. Maxine talks us through her pregnancy journey and having PCOS, how that impacted her cycles and ended up taking metformin the month before she fell pregnant. So she talks us through that. And then we discuss later on in her pregnancy gender disappointment at finding out that she was having a son, as her and her husband had both really hoped for a daughter. So we talk through what that gender disappointment was like and that it is quite normal for a lot of people to experience that in their pregnancies. We then discuss a gestational diabetes diagnosis at around 30 weeks and how that impacted her diet and sort of how she managed that, and then into a preeclampsia diagnosis right at the end of her pregnancy. So that ended up meaning that she was induced in hospital and they did that orally. She talks us through what the induction experience was like and then a really, really quick labour in the end. So from her waters breaking, where she didn't sort of think that she was in too much pain or really progressing through her labour that much, from then 2 hours later having her baby out and on her chest. So she talks us through that really fast labour and also having some meconium in the waters when her waters broke, and then her son needing some help with breathing afterwards when he was born. So we talk through all of that, and then we discuss her postpartum journey so far. So she's 9 weeks in, and we talk about a prolapse and what that experience has been like, as well as processing her really fast birth. So this is a pretty action-packed episode. I know that there will be something that you get out of it, and I just think that Maxine does a really good job of talking us through what her experiences have been like. So yeah, really grateful that she was willing to talk with me on the podcast, and I hope you love the episode. If you're listening, I would love you to take a screenshot and pop it on your Instagram story and tag me at Kiwi Birth Tales. I love to see where and when you're listening and what you're doing when you're listening to the podcast. It's always really nice. If you can leave me a review on whatever podcast app you're listening on, I'm always super grateful for those too. And otherwise, I will stop talking now and let you jump into the episode. Enjoy. Hi, Maxine. Thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Would you like to tell the listeners a little bit about you and who is in your family?
Yeah, so I'm Maxine, obviously, and I've got my husband, Cameron, and my 9-week-old son, Arthur.
Beautiful. And what part of New Zealand do you live in?
We're in Auckland.
Yeah, cool. Very cool. And what was the journey like to pregnancy for you guys?
Yeah, so for me, it was actually kind of interesting. So we had always planned, because my husband had this work opportunity to go overseas. So we were going to go to London and work for 3 months and then travel for a month and then come home and try to make a baby. But we got to London and then obviously COVID happens. So we came home after only 3 weeks of being there.
Oh, no.
And we just figured, yeah, I know. So we just figured let's just get into it. Let's just start trying now. And I've got PCOS, so I thought it was going to take quite a while. Like I had in my mind, it was going to take at least a year to get pregnant. But we were really lucky. We actually fell pregnant in just 4 months. So, yeah, we didn't really have any complications, which was really, we're really grateful for, really lucky. I did start metformin for the PCOS, but I was only on it for less than a month before I fell pregnant, which was really amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And were you doing anything else for the PCOS, sort of in terms of how you managed that with your lifestyle or anything like that before trying to conceive?
Not really, to be honest. I exercise regularly and have a healthy diet, which are the main things with PCOS. Mm-hmm. And my period had been pretty regular-ish for about a year before we started trying. So I was feeling pretty under control with it at that stage. But then actually the month before I got pregnant, I didn't get my period for like 2.5 months, if that makes sense. My last cycle was like over 200 days. Oh no, it wasn't. That's way too many. It was like 2.5 months anyway. And so I was like, oh dang it, it's going to be a lot harder to get pregnant than we thought. Like right when we want to start trying, my cycle is messing itself up. So that's when I started on the metformin and then I got pregnant straight away after that.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. And how did you find out that you were pregnant? Did you have any like early symptoms that might have given it away, or did you take a pregnancy test? What was that experience like?
So in hindsight, I actually started getting symptoms the day after we conceived, which is super early. I just remember we went out for lunch with some friends and then we went to Pack and Save. And you know how at Pack and Save they just have the fish like out? Mm-hmm. Like I never liked that section anyway. Like it's pretty stinky, but I was like literally gagging and I was like, oh my gosh, what if I'm pregnant? So I did a pregnancy test and it was negative because I thought that my ovulation was a week prior to that. But it actually turns out that my ovulation was like that week. So that was only one day after we conceived. So it was way too early to get a positive pregnancy test. But I'd done like four and got four negative tests. But I'm like, I'm pretty sure I'm pregnant. Like I'm having all these symptoms. So I just kept trying and then I got a positive test, and because my last cycle was such a long cycle, I didn't know when my period was actually meant to be due.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't know if I'm late or not, so I'm just gonna keep doing pregnancy tests and see. And then I was pregnant.
Awesome, cool. And did you have many symptoms in that first trimester, sort of after you got the positive test? What was your first 12 weeks like?
Yeah, so my main symptoms, well, the real early ones were like a real heightened sense of smell and food aversions, particularly to mushrooms, which I used to love. And then I just found revolting. But then from about 6 weeks on to about 12 or 13 weeks, I was just nauseous 24/7. Mm. I just could not focus on anything either. I didn't actually physically vomit, thankfully, but I just felt like crap the entire time.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. And what was the rest of your pregnancy experience like? So did you choose to do the standard testing that's offered in New Zealand, and did you end up finding out the sex of your baby?
Yep, so we did the standard testing. We didn't pay for any additional testing, so at the 20-week scan, we found out the gender, that we were having a boy. which, to be honest, we were a little bit disappointed about at first.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd love to unpack that, because I remember reading in your story submission that you talked about that, you know, finding out his the sex of your baby and sort of what that experience was like for you and your partner. And I get so many messages on the podcast about gender disappointment and working through that and hearing people talk about that. So do you want to take us through what your experience was like there?
Yeah, so we were really hoping for a girl. I think mainly because in my husband's family, there's all boys. And so I was just like, I just want to get a girl at some point. So if we get a girl first, then, you know, that's ideal. Yeah. So, yeah, so we were disappointed. Like, obviously, I was stoked to have a happy, healthy baby.
Yeah.
But yeah, it did take a couple of days to adjust to the fact that we were having a boy, and like going shopping for clothes. I was like, oh, there's so many cute girl clothes, but like hardly any cute boy clothes. And they're all like blue and have dinosaurs on them, which are cute, but like that's, it kind of feels like that's all there is. yeah. So yeah. And then, it didn't really help because all of our friends and family knew that we were hoping for a girl as well. And so they kept asking like how we were feeling, and we were like, oh yeah, we're a little bit disappointed, but like at the end of the day, we're happy we've got a healthy baby. And then some people would make comments like, oh, I honestly don't get why people care what gender it is. Like, I just want a healthy, happy baby. I'm like, yeah, obviously I do too. Like, obviously we just want a happy, healthy baby at the end. That's the goal. But like, it's okay to be a little bit disappointed because it's not what you were expecting or hoping for.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's important to normalize that, right? Because a lot of people have a hope for a boy or a girl, and if it doesn't go either way, then that can be really hard to work through. So yeah, I think it's really important to talk about.
Yeah, 100%. And I know someone else who's had a baby recently who was absolutely gutted pretty much the entire pregnancy that it wasn't the gender that they were hoping for. And yeah, like it's okay and it's normal to be disappointed. Like at the end of the day, you're going to be stoked with your baby, I would hope. So, you know, at the end of the day, yeah, it's totally normal to be disappointed. And as long as your baby is like happy and healthy, then, you know, that's all good.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Cool. And did you do the other testing that's offered, like the gestational diabetes screenings and anything else in your pregnancy?
Yep. So I got tested for diabetes. It was actually a bit late. I didn't find out that because I had gestational diabetes, but I didn't find out until about 30 or 32 weeks or something like that. So it was quite late in the game compared to others, I think, because that was like around Christmas and stuff. So my midwife was on leave and I was away, and you know, everything got in the way. But yeah, so I did find out that I had gestational diabetes, which I got to manage just through diet, thankfully. I didn't need any drugs for that. And then I also, 2 days before I ended up giving birth, I found out that I had preeclampsia as well. I'd had a couple of tests for it throughout my pregnancy, but, yeah, that was when I found out that I had it.
Yeah, and had you had the tests that you were doing previously, they were obviously normal?
Yeah, yeah. So they were all pretty normal. And then I think when I did find out, like 2 days before my pregnancy, that I had it, that it was pretty mild.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool. And before we jump into that, do you want to take us through if you did any, like, birth education? Did you go to any antenatal classes or anything else that you were sort of using to help you prepare for labour and birth?
Yep. So I found listening to this podcast really helpful, actually, especially once I found out that I had GD. Yeah, I found listening to other people's stories was really helpful.
Yeah.
But we also did do a antenatal class with the West Auckland Parents Centre, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. which it was beneficial. We joined it mainly, to be honest, to make connections with other parents. But the education was beneficial as well. I thought that it was going to be more to do with, like, what you do when you've got a baby and you take your baby home. But it was mostly focused on labor and birth, which obviously was, like, really helpful, and you do need to learn that because there's so many different scenarios that can happen. But, yeah, I was kind of – because I've never – my baby's the first in both mine and my husband's family and in our friend group, so I was kind of like, I don't know what to do with a baby.
Yeah, cool. And did you have many thoughts on, like, a birth plan or how you wanted your birth to go, anything that you didn't want to have happen, or were you just sort of going with the flow?
I'm a very go-with-the-flow kind of person, so – like I had written out with my midwife, like, an ideal situation. But at the end of the day, I was like, what needs to happen needs to happen. So I was pretty loose on my birth plan.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. And were you doing anything in preparation for birth? Like, I know there's 100 different things that you can be trying to go into labor, but were you doing, like, any antenatal expressing or perineal massage or anything like that?
Yeah, so I was doing antenatal expressing for my gestational diabetes anyway.
Yeah.
We stored up quite a bit of colostrum, which ended up being very helpful for the baby after birth with his sugar levels. But in terms of, like, trying to induce labor naturally, I went on, like, quite a few walks, and I tried, like, curb walking, which I felt like such a dork doing. I was, like, trying to have, like, quite a bit of sex as well. Oh, I did get a stretch and sweep as well, actually.
Okay. Yeah, and how did you find the stretch and sweep experience? What was that like?
Well, I mean, it wasn't, like, pleasant. it was definitely a bit uncomfortable, but, it wasn't too bad. I didn't mind it. I gave birth on a Wednesday, like, just after midnight, and I had the stretch and sweep on the Monday, so, like, 2 days before I gave birth, or, like, a day and a half. And she found that I was already 1 centimeter dilated, that she could stretch to 4 centimeters, and that my cervix was fully effaced as well, which she said she's never seen in a first time mum before, and was, like, really shocked about that. So obviously my body was already getting ready, and I was probably already in early labor.
Awesome. Cool. And just before we jump into your birth story, were you having extra, like, growth scans or anything like that because of the gestational diabetes? Like, were they concerned about his size or anything like that?
Yep. So I did have 2 growth scans, and he was looking 50th percentile in both of them for everything, which was really good. So they weren't planning to induce me for that. Thankfully.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. And I know that you mentioned you ended up getting a positive preeclampsia test. So do you want to take us through the start of your labor? How did it start? Was it spontaneous, and how far along were you?
Yep. So, so on that Monday that I had the stretch and sweep, that's when my midwife also found out that my blood pressure was, like, a little bit high, and my urine test that day as well was just faintly in the green for preeclampsia, or for protein in the urine. So I went and did a blood test for that, and my midwife called me at about 7 o'clock that night, saying that, yes, you have preeclampsia, and to go to the hospital. But after the stretch and sweep, because I was already, like, dilated and, like, fully effaced, she did say, like, I reckon you're probably going to have the baby tonight. So I went into the hospital thinking, oh, I'm going to have a baby tonight at, like, 8 p.m. And, they were, like, they said that they would start inducing me in the morning if I didn't go into spontaneous labor because of the preeclampsia, which I had, like, a few contractions on that Monday night, but it kind of stopped, and then we went to sleep. And then in the morning they started to induce me, And it was at Waitakere Hospital, so they've got the oral induction now there.
Is it misoprostol, the oral drug?
I can't remember what it's called, to be honest.
That's okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, so they started giving me that at about 10 in the morning, and then they were, like, monitoring me throughout the day and, like, giving me more doses. I think I probably had about 8 doses. And nothing was really happening. Like, I'd had Braxton Hicks throughout my pregnancy from about 28 weeks, and the contractions that I was having didn't feel too much different from them, to be honest. They were kind of like ramping up a little bit in intensity and like getting closer together. But I was still like chatting away and like pretty happy, smiley. So the midwives were like, oh yeah, she's still ages away. Then at about 8 o'clock that night on Tuesday night, my mum came in to bring my husband some dinner. And so we were just all chatting away, talking. I was like bouncing on a Swiss ball at this point. And at 10:30, my waters broke in a huge movie style gush, which I was not expecting at all. And from there on, it was just like all go. It was just contractions back to back, super intense. I started screaming like straight away, and I pride myself on having a pretty high pain tolerance, but oh my goodness, nothing could prepare me for that. Like straight away, I was like, I need the gas. And then they were like, really, already? I was like, yes. And then like maybe half an hour to an hour later, I was like, I want an epidural. Like, it was just so intense. And so the midwife came in and checked me, and I was already 9 centimeters dilated. And so she was like, no, you're not having an epidural. It is far too late for that. Also, I should probably mention there was meconium in my waters. So they were monitoring me the entire time as well. But they still thought I was like ages away. I was like, when she found out that I was 9 centimeters dilated, I was like, how long is it going to be? Because I can't take this for much longer. Like, the contractions were literally back to back. I did not have much of a break between them at all. And they were so intense. So she was like, I can't tell you how long it's going to be. Like, it's different for everyone. But at that stage, I was already like, I want to start pushing. So they wheeled me into the birthing room. I was in an assessment room this whole time. And so they birthed me into the like birthing room, and then I had to like get up off the bed and walk to the other bed. And that felt like such a huge mission. Like, I felt like I just could not do it. All I wanted to do was just lie on the bed and like scream. I did it. And then when I got there, they called my midwife, and I started pushing straight away. And literally half an hour later, my baby was born.
Wow.
So that was 2 hours from my waters breaking to my baby being born with half an hour of pushing. And it was honestly the most intense 2 hours of my life.
And how did you, like, obviously he came out, and was he popped straight up on your chest, or like what sort of happened immediately from there?
So he was popped onto my chest, but he wasn't breathing. So it was like quite a rush to like cut his cord, and they like took him away to like sort him out and get him breathing. But I was also in shock. Like, I was completely dissociated. I had no idea what was going on. And so, to be honest, I was actually glad that they took him away and sorted him out, because when they first put him on my chest, I didn't even respond, because I was just so out of it from the birth. So like, they took him away for like 15 minutes, which also gave me some time to like kind of regather myself and recoup from what had happened. I think they were in quite a rush to like get my placenta out as well. So I didn't push it out. They like gave me an injection and just pulled it out. So then they gave me back my baby, And then half an hour later, my midwife turned up, so she missed the birth.
Yeah.
So it was quite a shock for all of us, I think.
Yeah, it sounds like it was. And did you need any stitches or anything like that? Did you have any tearing from your birth?
Thankfully not, which is quite surprising given it was a very quick delivery. I didn't need any stitches. I had a graze. I think one of the midwives asked the other one, like, for her opinion, like, would you stitch this or not? And they both agreed not. So, yeah, no stitches.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. And so when you had him back with you, did you just do some skin to skin, or did they try and help you to latch him on, or what sort of happened from there?
Yeah, so we did some skin to skin, and we tried to do the first latch, which wasn't successful. And like from the antenatal classes that I'd done, they said, oh, the first latch, so important. And so I was like freaking out. I was like, am I not going to be able to breastfeed because of this? But my midwife assured me that no, like the first latch doesn't always happen, and it doesn't have any say on what your breastfeeding journey is going to be like, whether it does happen or not. So yeah, it was just a really nice time with my husband and I, and my mum ended up actually being there in the end because she was there when my waters broke.
Yeah.
So impromptuly she was there, which was actually really nice because she could support my husband and me as well. And yeah, it was in the middle of the night. So I then like had a shower and we went back to my room, and I don't, honestly don't even know what happened from then on. Probably slept, probably tried breastfeeding again. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. It's all a bit of a blur in those first couple of days usually. And
for sure.
How long did you end up spending in the hospital then before you went home?
We stayed in the hospital for 2 more nights. So all up, we were in from Monday to Friday, and I gave birth on the Wednesday at midnight. So, yeah, I didn't feel rushed or pushed at all to leave. But also I felt comfortable staying and then leaving when I did. But they had to monitor Arthur afterwards for his blood sugar levels because of my gestational diabetes, and they also had to monitor me with my blood pressure.
And was there any issue with his blood sugars over that time?
He had one reading that was low, so they gave him some sort of like glucose thing. But I had also done like quite a bit of antenatal expressing, so that came in real handy with helping to like keep his blood sugars up as well. After that one low reading, he was actually all good.
Awesome. Cool. And how did you find the experience of taking your baby home, and what was that first sort of week or so like? Did you notice if your milk came in, did you notice sort of a hormonal shift or any of the baby blues? What was that whole experience like?
Yeah, so I think because Arthur was the first baby on both our sides, my family and Cameron's family were both very full on with wanting to visit. So we had a lot of support, which was amazing. Like, we didn't have to cook a meal for the first week or two that we were at home, which was absolutely incredible, and we had so much support. But to be honest, I did find it a bit much having so many visitors. I did kind of feel like someone was constantly here, which was quite exhausting, especially when I just wanted to get into our own routine with the baby, like maybe make a nap schedule or something, I don't know, figure out what he's actually like when no one is here, and like, you know, has some time just bonding with the three of us. I can't complain too much because it was pretty good. I didn't really notice any baby blues, and to be honest, I didn't notice when my milk came in. I didn't get that real rock hard boob feeling that I've heard most people experience. But yeah, it obviously did because he's gained good weight and yes, obviously in now.
Cool. And how did you find your breastfeeding journey sort of started and how's it going now? Are you still trying to breastfeed or what does that look like for you?
Yes, yeah, so we are exclusively breastfeeding. I'm pretty lucky that we haven't had too many issues. From the first couple of days I had a little bit of blistering, but yeah, nothing really major after that. Arthur was born with quite a severe tongue tie, which he had snipped at 6 days. And mm-hmm. after that, he's just been fine. Like, he's got a real good deep latch, and I haven't had too much damage to my nipples, which is really amazing. So, yeah, we're quite lucky in that front.
Yeah, cool. And did you pick up on the tongue tie, or how did you discover that?
Yeah, so because it was quite severe, they actually noticed it straight away from birth. And I've actually got a tongue tie too, which I never had snipped or anything when I was younger. But so my midwife saw that in me and so knew to check him. So, yeah, they knew about it straight from birth. And then all the midwives in the hospital noticed it as well. And, like, we saw a lactation consultant in the hospital who also noticed it. And so, yeah, it was quite obvious.
Yeah. Cool. And what about your physical recovery from birth? So I know you said you didn't need any stitches in the end, but how did you find physically recovering from your extremely fast birth process?
Yeah. So I do have a prolapse, which I found out actually 50% of women have, but yeah. I guess not everyone notices it. But I noticed that, like, it just wasn't feeling right down there, which I knew, like, I'm still only 9 weeks postpartum, you know, and when I picked it up, it was even earlier than that. So, you know, it's quite early. So I was like, I don't know when things are meant to, like, recover, but because I didn't have stitches, like, I would have thought that things would have been kind of healed by now. So, like, when I'm rocking the baby or doing certain stretches or walking for too long or doing certain things, like, I really notice, like, it feels quite uncomfortable and, like, a bit of friction down there. So I went and had it checked out by my GP and she confirmed that it was a prolapse. And I'm yet to see a woman's health physio. The soonest I could get in was July, so still a few weeks away from that. But hopefully just seeing a physio and getting my pelvic floor back up to scratch will help with that.
Yeah, was that your GP's recommendation as well? Like, what did she suggest doing for it?
Yeah, so she told me to see a women's health physio. She said she could refer me through the public health system if I wanted, but that would take months. So, I just decided to go privately. She also told me to try out Kegel balls, which I found interesting, and my sister is a nurse, and so I talked to her about it, and she was like, really, did she tell you to do Kegel balls? Because that is like just asking for a yeast infection. So
right.
I don't know if I'm going to use those or not. I might just talk to the physio first and see what she reckons. Yeah,
it sounds like that's a good call. Cool. And I know you said in your submission that you're sort of still processing the birth and it was obviously really fast. So where are you at with that now? Have you reflected a bit more on your birth experience? Have you talked to anybody about it? Like, where are you at and how are you feeling now?
Yeah, I've actually decided to talk to a therapist about it. So I'm going to meet her for the first time next week. Just because I dissociated so much straight after the birth, I don't want it to become a trigger point for next time. Because we are planning to have more than one baby. So I just want to process it and, I guess, like, understand why I, like, dissociated and stuff, so that next time I can feel more prepared to go into it and, Yeah, to be honest, I have been feeling quite anxious just about the next birth, and yeah, also about, because if we weren't already in the hospital with the preeclampsia, like if that never got picked up, it would have been a very traumatic home birth, because it was 2 yeah, hours from start to finish. My midwife would have, like, we would have called her and she would have said, oh yeah, you're probably still ages away. Just like stay at home for a bit longer. You know, and yeah, so it would have been, we wouldn't have noticed that there was meconium in my waters because it was really faint. And like when the midwife came in after my waters broke and asked me if there was meconium, I was like, I don't know, probably not. Like, I don't think so. And then she checked it and was like, oh yeah, there is. So we wouldn't have known that. So we wouldn't have gone into the hospital from there. And then it would have just got too intense. We would have either tried to go to the hospital in the car, and I probably would have given birth in the car, or we would have given birth at home, and like I would have been completely out of it. The baby wasn't breathing. It would have just been my husband having to deal with this. So I'm like, I'm kind of freaking out about next time, because I've heard that the second birth can be even faster. So I'm like, I know though that because of the diabetes and the preeclampsia, like I'll be a high risk pregnancy from the beginning, which is actually comforting for me, because it means I'll be monitored real closely. So yeah, I'm just hoping that I'll be in hospital before I go into labor again next time.
Yeah. And like, do you think that the sort of anxiety or the way that you're feeling about your birth has impacted like your bond with your baby at all, or the way that you sort of feel as a mum, or do you think it's just like quite, you're able to keep them quite separate?
I think I am able to keep them quite separate. I've also been getting like quite anxious just about random future, like way in the future things, like about Arthur's first day at school. I'm like, oh, I don't want him to get bullied. Like, I'm real anxious about that. And then the other day in the shower, I just was randomly thinking about his first school camp. I'm like, that's literally like 10 years away. I was like, what if he wants me? But yeah, other than that, like, it hasn't affected our bond. I am able to keep them quite separate, and I do know that these anxieties, like thinking about his first school camp, like I know that it's silly to be anxious about that right now. So yeah, I guess that in that sense, it's easier to keep it like a bit separate.
Yeah. Cool. And what about your relationship with your husband? So always get lots of questions about how people's relationship changes after a baby, and what the sort of sharing of the load is like at home. So how does that work for you guys? And what has your, what have the changes in your relationship been like since Arthur was born?
Yeah. My husband is honestly amazing. He is so supportive and he is such a great dad. He had a month off work, thankfully.
Yeah.
Because we're meant to go to Europe last year and we didn't. So now he's got all the annual leave that he used. So during that time, it was very equally shared, except for like at one stage, my back, just from holding the baby and like bending over to change him and stuff, it was just so painful. So he actually did everything except for feed him, which was amazing. And now that he's back at work, he helps a lot on the weekends, and when he gets home from work, I do all the care like overnight just so he can get some sleep before he has to go to work. I don't actually think it's really affected our relationship too much, because we've been together for like 9 years and we're like really tight, you know, so like we were already really tight and we still are. And he hasn't pressured me at all about getting back into the bedroom, which is good, because I'm not feeling ready for that yet.
I was going to ask you about that with the prolapse, if you'd noticed like a pain or anything that was obvious with that, but yeah, I'm sure that at 9 weeks you still don't really feel like you're ready for that just yet.
No, Definitely not. I think the prolapse is actually making me more worried, to be honest. Like I had when I saw my GP about the prolapse, she did like a whole internal exam and she was like, oh, well, I'm in here. I might as well do your smear since it was due. So like she's been right in there. And to be honest, it actually did feel fine. But, oh, sex is just like it's like next level, you know, like I'm just I've heard from other people who've had prolapses that it doesn't hurt during sex, but it can hurt afterwards. But yeah, I think I'm just going to wait until I see the physio and start off small, like with stuff other than sex and then like work our way up, I think.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Maxine, and sharing your stories with us. I've really loved talking to you, and I know that there's going to be lots of little gems in there for the listeners. So, yeah, just super grateful that you were willing to come on the podcast and share your story.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales. I hope you have enjoyed it, and I am already looking forward to bringing you next week's episode, so keep an eye out.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.